Hello, this is the Winchester Talking News for the week ending the 21st of March. The extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle this week have been edited by Michael Turner and Lorna Chorley. And I'm your presenter, Vara Williams. And your readers today are Margaret Boyden.
Hello.
Michael Wyard.
Hello.
And Brian Woodruff.
Hello.
Now we come to the main headlines of the week. They are: lack of bus hub will hit elderly, Finn's the coolest kid on the block, and £36 million bill to repair flood-damaged roads. So we'll go over, please, Margaret, for the first one.
Lack of bus hub will hit elderly, Silver Hill bus station row. The elderly will be among those to suffer most from a decision not to replace Winchester's bus station in the Silver Hill regeneration, it is claimed. The £130 million project, which will transform the heart of the city with new shops and homes, has been in the pipeline for 20 years and will create hundreds of new jobs. Work on it could start as early as October this year. But the plan from Henderson Global Investors has no bus station after Operation Stagecoach said it would not be interested in running it. Philip Vosch, chairman of Age UK Winchester, said the decision will further increase the risk of isolating the elderly. If bus services are not readily available, then some people will be stuck in their homes, he said. A lot of problems come from not being able to connect to bus services. Right now, they come in from outlying villages and can be confident that they can go from the bus station to Badger Farm or the hospital or wherever it is they're going. How would an elderly person get across town if one bus arrives on one side and the other bus they need goes from the other side? Changing the number of a bus service can be enough to throw some older people and put them off going out. I can imagine quite a lot of people adopting that sort of attitude, added Mr. Vosch. At a town forum meeting last week, Councillor James Maynard suggested Stagecoach may have been influenced by the developers and asked whether the firm had arrived at its decision before the council failed to press the case for a station, something Stagecoach Managing Director Andrew Dyer denied. It was a mutual agreement that more retail space rather than a bus station suited the developer and suited Stagecoach, he said. It's undoubtedly true to say that for those passengers who want to make an interchange from one route to another, then a bus station provides a more convenient environment. But the vast majority of people who use our buses have the city as their primary destination. George Hollingberry, MP for the Mearne Valley, does not feel the lack of a station would necessarily trouble his constituents, many of whom live in outlying villages. One would like to think that those designing the system will be sensible so that you can get from A to B, and I'm not convinced you need a bus station to do that. In fact, London is a very good example. There is no bus station anywhere in London, he said. It has also emerged that Henderson's plans do not include public toilets. There are no public toilets in the design at the moment, and that's exactly the purpose of public consultation, to gauge strength of feeling on a particular point, said Steve Tilbury, the City Council's corporate director. The latest plans follow an agreement with Henderson and the City Council with rival landowner London and Henley to acquire remaining land at King's Walk, the Antiques Market and the former post office. The area currently occupied by the bus station would be given over to more shops and MX Retail, acting as a consultant on the complex, says demand from retailers is extremely strong.
This piece is entitled Finn's the Coolest Kid on the Block, and it's accompanied by a very jolly photograph of a little boy sitting in a new wheelchair, accompanied by his mother, and they're both wreathed in smiles. With his Go Faster, Super Cool orange wheelchair, there's no stopping 6-year-old Finn Kitchen now. The lively Kingsworthy boy is enjoying a new set of wheels thanks to the support of his community. Finn, who attends Kingsworthy Primary School, has a rare genetic condition, Joubert syndrome, which affects 1 in 200,000 people. It means his balance, speech and coordination is affected, among other ailments. He can't walk for prolonged periods, so Mum Katie, who is 31, and Dad Dan, of 36, of Wesley Road, set up the website, which is called Even Superheroes Wobble, to raise awareness of the condition and fundraise for a lightweight wheelchair. Before long, friends, colleagues and community groups pooled together to raise the £2,500 needed for the wheelchair, which is in the picture here. The superhero-loving Finn, who likes street dancing and is learning to play the piano, said, "It's great and it's shiny and I like it because it's orange. That's my favourite colour. I can now do more on my own and wheel by myself. I go by myself and collect items and come back when we go shopping." Mrs. Kitchen said, "We were overwhelmed with the support. It just shows how important he is within the community." When you start fundraising, it's difficult as a parent because you feel like you're asking for help. But it was a close friend who basically strong-armed us into it. Mrs. Kitchen said that on launching the campaign last September, it gathered pace quickly, and by January, everyone from the girl guides in the primary school to a local plumber, as well as Winchester Round Table, they all chipped in with fundraising ideas and donations. He really is a one-off. Everyone knows him, and we are very proud of all he's managed to achieve. It's amazingly lucky to live in such a great community, said Mrs. Kitchen.
£36 million bill to repair flood-damaged roads. Repairing Hampshire's flood-damaged roads after the wettest winter on record could cost up to £36 million. The huge repair bill was revealed as the government said it was making available £140 million to repair roads, but that pot is to be dished out to the whole country. It comes weeks after the county bosses passed a budget that aims to cut £3.4 million from road maintenance as part of an overall drive to save £92 million. Initially, it was thought that the repair bill would be several million, but the true bill has rocketed since the extent of the damage became clear. The county's roads are ravaged by hundreds of potholes as well as widespread scarring to the road surface after a constant barrage of storms. Engineers are faced with widespread drainage work, and once river levels have subsided, they're preparing to deploy underwater divers to assess damage to bridge structures. But Councillor Sean Woodward, portfolio holder on the environment, said it was unclear how much of the government cash the County Council would receive, and warned the full extent of the damage will only become clear once the ground levels receded. He said, "Our estimate is that to fix the extensive winter damage on Hampshire's roads would cost between £25 million and £36 million. We're committed to keeping Hampshire moving and will, as soon as we can, assess the damage to the road network, prioritise what's needed to be done first, and programme in the works. We have 5,280 miles of road in Hampshire to take care of, many of which have suffered prolonged flooding, while all of Hampshire has experienced extremely heavy rainfall over many weeks. Excessive water seeping into the road surface, followed by freezing overnight temperatures, causes it to break up from underneath, causing damage and creating defects and potholes, which are costly to repair." He added, "During the flooding, we've been working around the clock to keep the roads open, clearing water and fallen trees, and in some instances building temporary roads above flooding to keep major roads open where it's possible to do this, for example in Andover Road in Winchester. We're now looking at plans for resurfacing the worst affected roads and pavements, drainage works and edge repairs." A Department of Transport spokesman said it was now inviting the local authorities to bid for the money.
That was the headlines, and now we have the deaths. They are rather a lot of them, I'm afraid, this week. Barrett, Jean Barrett, who died in Basildon. Brooks, Harry Brooks, peacefully at home, aged 98. Christie, John Christie, former goalkeeper for Southampton Football Club, aged 84. Goodyear, Iris Goodyear, aged 89. Halliwell, Frieda Halliwell, at Winchester Hospital. Haywood, Don Haywood, aged 79. Hebbard, Leslie Hebbard, after losing her battle with leukemia. Hoskins, Yvonne Hoskins. Hughes, Linda Hughes, peacefully at home. Isaac, Mary Isaac, aged 87. Lyndon Skeggs, June Lyndon Skeggs, in Winchester, in her 90th year. Ian Murray, unexpectedly. Murrell, Joan Murrell, aged 96. Spence, Margaret Spence, aged 90. White, Sydney White, aged 84. And finally, Wilson, Trevor Wilson, formerly of Winchester, died at Fordingbridge, aged 77. And now we'll go over, Margaret, please, to the Christian comment.
And the Christian comment this week is contributed by Terry E. Hemming and headed Priests in the Crossfire, an apt image for Lent. We are all waiting with bated breath to see what happens in the Ukraine and the Crimea. Will the rhetoric be transformed into violence? Will one side back down, or will the other give in first? One picture that sticks in my mind from the television is that of Orthodox priests standing in the middle in Kiev. They are holding crosses and praying between two sides who are hurling rocks, shouting each other, and throwing Molotov cocktails. Despite the abuse being shouted and the palpable hatred from one group to another, they remain praying for the dead, for justice and peace, for safety, and especially for the removal of hatred. Like the medics who treat the injured from whatever side, so the priests pray for all. The priests holding their crosses are a good sign for Lent. Jesus is portrayed as a reconciler. He came, we are taught, to reconcile humanity to God and humans to each other. When he was on the cross, it was not only the physical pain he had to bear, but also the mockery and scorn of those around him. Christians are meant to follow him and be reconcilers also. Paul says, "All this is from God, who reconciled us to himself through Christ and has given us the ministry of reconciliation." That is not an easy task, for it means receiving the pain of other people. We may not be in the same danger as the priests from bullets and missiles, but we shall receive the insults and anger. Nietzsche thought Christianity not a suitable religion because it encouraged weakness. Many reflect that view and feel that it is only winners who have value. Christianity is counterculture on this point. Its leader was no winner, having led an apparently unsuccessful ministry with few followers left before a show trial and an excruciating criminal's death. Yet we shall soon celebrate his victory in the resurrection at Easter. As we move towards that, perhaps we should look to see how we may act as reconcilers during Lent. We may not need the courage of the priests to stand where bullets are flying, but we shall still need to be brave to get people in our families, workplaces, neighbourhoods, and even churches to listen to each other and seek to bring them together. So may I suggest, as part of your Lenten practices, that you hold the pictures of the priests with their crosses standing in the crossfire and aim to follow their example and seek to be someone who brings reconciliation rather than someone who wishes to win at all costs.
And now we have letters to the editor. And the first letter is read by Michael.
This letter is entitled Dismemberment of Health Service, and it's written by Christopher Pankhurst. Sir, I suppose I shouldn't have been surprised to learn that the medical details of 47 million patients over a period of 13 years have been sold to insurance companies so that they could adjust premiums. As a result of the analysis, companies have been advised that higher premiums can be justified for people under 50. The government is hastily planning to shut that particular stable door, but how many more are there? One is that a marketing consultancy has used patient information to advise clients on how to place adverts in social media campaigns. Another is that the entire hospital episode statistics data set has been uploaded to Google servers, and a firm called PA Consulting is reported to be working with this material for commercial purposes. The information is said to be secure, but we all know what that means. This comes as companies which contract to the NHS are allowed to use the NHS logo, concealing their real nature. The NHS is being dismembered indeed. Christopher Pankhurst, Greenhill Road, Winchester.
Oliver Gray now asks, is Nash's memory letting him down? Sir, I wonder if readers can help me to resolve a puzzle. In his recently published autobiography, Wild Tales, Graham Nash describes a transformative experience he had in Winchester Cathedral, which prompted him to write his hit song, Cathedral. He claims to have visited the Great Hall to see the Round Table and describes the following scene. As I approached, there was a man dressed in something resembling a beefeater's outfit, holding a small tray. On the tray were small horn beakers of water and little squares of bread. To me, this sounds as if Nash was in St. Cross, where his experience could have been of a St. Cross brother offering a wayfarer's dole, in which case the liquid would have been beer. Do or did the brothers offer the dole outside the Great Hall as well? It was 1971 and Nash was, by his own admission, tripping on LSD at the time, so I guess he could easily have been mistaken. And that's from Oliver Gray, Finch's Lane, Twyford.
This is a letter from Mrs. Valerie Stutchbury. Where are these important portraits? Sir, having been a member of staff at the RHCH in Winchester for very many years and having reread The History of the Royal Hampshire County Hospital by Barbara Carpenter Turner, I was reminded of the wonderful portraits in the boardroom. People such as Dr. Alured Clark, founder of the hospital, Brigadier General Kemp Welsh, and Sir George Cooper, amongst others. Having had to attend hospital recently, I asked if I could visit the boardroom to recall the joy of seeing them. I was so distressed to find that all had been removed. I started to make inquiries as to what could have happened to them, but no one on the staff had any idea. It was suggested that they could be in the old dungeon, but they were not there. I contacted Basingstoke, but they were also unable to help, and I feel they were removed before the amalgamation. I'm now hoping that one of your many readers, possibly former members of staff, might know of a storage place where they may have been put, or have some idea of what happened to them and could contact me via the address below. It would be so nice if they could be returned to their place of origin and on display. They are such an important part of the history of Winchester's hospital. Mrs. Valerie Stutchbury, Malcolm Road, Chandler's Ford. And this letter is accompanied by a picture of the hospital in the Romsey Road, which was founded in 1736 and relocated to higher ground in Romsey Road in the 1860s. Florence Nightingale advised on the site and building, which was designed by eminent architect William Butterfield, who, like Clark and Kemp Welsh, had a wing or ward of the hospital named in his honour.
And I should think if anybody who's listening does actually know anything about it, they better contact the Hampshire Chronicle, because it doesn't give her full address, does it, there? It just says Malcolm Road.
Oh, just Malcolm Road.
Yes, Stutchbury. Mm. Yeah. Anyway, right.
This letter comes from Bob Whitmarsh, and it's entitled Leave the Science to the Scientists. Sir, Tony Roman, letters of March the 13th, puts forward some weak arguments about global warming. Her initial paragraphs do not warrant a response, but she then goes on to display the well-worn arguments of climate sceptics, which appear all too often in these pages. First, she attempts to discount climate change by implying that the science is not certain. But the science is never completely certain. That is the nature of science, as it pushes back the boundaries of knowledge. Second, she argues that the climate has not warmed in the last 15 years. If she had informed herself of the latest science, she would have learned that the apparent hiatus in the rise of global surface temperatures since around 1998 is real, but also part of a natural phenomenon in the Pacific Ocean that within a few years will flip into a different state when atmospheric warming will again resume. Meanwhile, the oceans, which hold much of the heat from the sun, have continued to warm without stop. It's only a matter of time before this heat is fed back into the atmosphere once more. May I suggest that Ms. Roman leaves the science to the scientists and is more trusting of what she is told by those with greater knowledge of the climate? This is from Bob Whitmarsh, Berwick Avenue, Winchester.
And now from Peter Rees, who's the chairman of Winchester Labour Party. River Park issues still unaddressed. Sir, Simon Cook's disingenuous response to legitimate concerns I raised about the River Park debacle illustrates perfectly how the issues have not been addressed. I refer specifically to the local two-part party collaboration over all major issues in Winchester, which Labour and the Independents get little or no chance to be involved in. It is not an open, transparent, democratic system. Councillor Pines was absolutely right about the Conservative Democrat ISG with no Labour representation in the process. Of course, he can, as chairman of the scrutiny, deliver a verdict on the outcome of the ISG, but he also can be immediately overruled by the same coalition in the Cabinet and subsequent Council. Nothing gets agreed on the Overview and a Scrutiny Committee because of the total imbalance of members, 5-5-1, giving the coalition an enormous majority veto. The real point is that very few Lib Dem members actually support the redevelopment in the current River Park site. As Councillor Cook will know, as the former Director of Leisure Services who participated in the selection of the current contract holders, DC Leisure, there are concerns about the management of the River Park Centre currently being investigated by WCC auditors who will report to the ISG. The Labour representatives have taken a straightforward and principled position, refusing to go down any route unless and until all significant information has been made available for analysis for the delivery of an open decision for the community. Councillor Cook would do well not to pontificate about the appropriate cause for transparency when he belongs to a failed party who can only govern with permission achieved through an uncollaborative coalition. And that's from Peter Rees.
As a letter from Mrs. Michelle T. Fox Roussel. Destruction of City's Roman Wall. Sir, your front page of March the 13th rightly drew attention to the possible destruction of the Roman Wall foundations recently revealed in Southgate Street. That same day, wanting to take some photos, I was refused entry by the developer's archaeologists on health and safety grounds, although no work was taking place and I was in appropriate clothing. I later phoned the archaeology department at HCC Chilcombe, who helpfully gave me the number of Tracy Matthews, the WCC archaeologist. The ensuing conversation was interesting for several reasons, but she did imply that as a private individual and not a university student or member of a local historical group, I was not really entitled to visit such sites, although I could look at photos or read the report when written. Regarding the destruction of the wall, when I asked her to confirm or deny this, she said that, As I was probably aware, archaeology was a destructive process itself, and that after the walls had been evaluated and reported, it was apparently okay for it to disappear forever. I find these comments very disappointing. We live in a city which has been important since the time of the first Britons. Sadly, for such a prominent Roman town, Venta Belgarum has few visible remains left to enjoy. How sad, then, when such a discovery is revealed, we are denied access to it, unless we are members of specific groups. Even more regrettable is that its potential destruction appears condoned. Surely, the aim of archaeology should be primarily conservation and transparency to increase our understanding of the past for all. This does not appear to be the case in this instance. Mrs. Michelle T. Fox Roussel, Hanover Lodge, St. Cross, Winchester.
Looking back, we have the historical. The news from 200 years ago starts us off with Michael, please.
Right, this one, as you say, comes from 200 years ago, March the 21st, 1814. And it's headed, Pillory Sentence Cut Short by Cold. On Tuesday last, Charles Avenel was put in the pillory on the Grand Parade at Portsmouth, pursuant to his sentence at the last Winchester Assizes for compounding with different pawnbrokers after threatening them with informations for taking improper premiums on pledges. Large quantities of eggs, potatoes, oranges and rubbish of every description were made use of by the populace. The time specified was 2 hours, but the cold was so intense as to occasion an almost total suspension of animation, and at the end of about an hour and three quarters, he was taken down. Died on Saturday last in the evening at his house in Week, James Hinksman, Esquire. He was a man of exemplary piety and a firm adherent to the established church. By his will, he has amply provided for the indigent inhabitants of Week, now and in the future, and he has most liberally rewarded his old and faithful servants for their duty and attachment towards him. Mr. Hinksman has left a benefaction to the county hospital, and the residue of his property to his cousin, Mr. King of Week, who has managed his concerns for some years past.
Now, 100 years ago, on March the 21st, 1914, offender wanted to be deported. Winchester City Bench, Michael McKeel and John Henry Richards, seamen, of no fixed address, were brought up separately charged with wilfully breaking a plate glass window at the Crown and Anchor Inn on Saturday night and pleaded guilty. McKeel said he'd done it because he wanted to be deported. He told the bench that he was an American citizen. He had been in England 9 months and was destitute. He'd tramped all over the country and could not get work. If he begged, he was locked up. The only thing he could do was to commit some offence and get deported.
A long overdue piece of justice will be done. A statue to commemorate William Walker, the deep-sea diver who saved the cathedral with his two hands, will be dedicated by the Dean, the Very Reverend O.H. Gibbs Smith, CBE, at Evensong. The statue, a bronze by Sir Charles Wheeler, President of the Royal Academy, has been given by Lord Ashburton, Lord Lieutenant of the County, and will stand by the Langton Chapel, overlooking that part of the cathedral where the greatest danger lay. Hampshire is substantially involved in large new expansion schemes for the South, announced on Thursday in White Paper and its accompanying report, The South East. I'm sorry, but...
And now, 25 years ago, on March the 23rd, 1989, M3 inspector rejects tunnel. The M3 Inquiry Inspector is backing the Department of Transport's cutting route through Twyford Down and has rejected calls for a tunnel. His confidential report, which is not due to be made public until July, recommends that the government adopts the DOT's proposals, even though he accepts that the tunnel scheme is the most popular and least damaging to the environment. The department's route passes in a deep cutting through Twyford Down to the east of St Catherine's Hill, destroying two scheduled ancient monuments and damaging two sites of special scientific interest and an area of outstanding natural beauty. The behaviour of Lager Louts has been slammed by Hampshire's Chief Constable, Mr John Hoddinott, in his first annual report. It is these perpetrators of alcohol-related violence who are singled out for special attention by the Chief Constable because of the extra demands they've placed on the force's already stretched manpower and financial resources. It's been our priority, not just because it directly affects our officers, with 272 of them being assaulted in the last year, but also because such behaviour, whether in the street or at home, strikes directly at the values of any law-abiding society.
Now we have editorial comment from Michael, please.
Editorial comment is entitled "Scrapping Bus Station Sends the Wrong Message." The omission of a new bus station at the heart of the Silver Hill regeneration is something that has been greeted with dismay by many. These very pages have published readers' concerns in recent times, and now Age Concern has added its voice to the dissenters. It says having no bus hub would deter many old folk from going into town and would add to the isolation that some of their generation already experience. But it's not only the elderly who would clearly benefit from having a shiny new bus station. The city is rightly promoting a greener agenda, and one way of achieving this is to have an efficient joined-up public transport hub to prove it means business. Doing away with the bus station will send all the wrong messages. Getting it right now, before the first bulldozer moves in, is imperative. A bus station can't be bolted on in the future. Steve Tilbury, the City Council's corporate director, says further public consultation on the development can still influence the final outcome. Perhaps the City Council and partner Henderson should take notice then of the growing chorus of disapproval about scrapping the bus station.
And then it's first person, please, from Brian.
And first person this week is Ronald Allison, who's headlined Immediate Probabilities and Long-Term Possibilities. I write this month after a week of fine spring weather and a marvellous weekend, when it was not only warm for March, but straightforward warm. Everyone seems to be feeling better and cheerier than during the past winter's storms and deluges, but no surprise there. Whether or not that's still the case after the budget, I'm not able to say. Doesn't George Osborne realise the Chronicle goes out to press on a Wednesday? But I certainly feel indebted to those who did so much to restrict the flooding and subsequent damage and misery wherever they could. I realise, of course, there are many still suffering too much heartbreak and turmoil, to say nothing of financial worries, to be able to relax. Homes, shops, businesses, farms, schools, churches, and essentially lives remain damaged and distressed and will take many, many months, in some cases, to return to business as usual. I can only write at first hand of what happened in and around Winchester, where damage limitation was successful because everyone seemed to be pulling together. The two councils, city and county, the Environment Agency, the fire services, the military and many other organisations and volunteers all pitched in. It was a combined operation repeated throughout the county which led one friend, a member of Winchester City Council, to wish it could always be like that. No petty bickering, everyone working together. If only. And yet how effective are coalition governments? Well, we're having the chance to judge for ourselves in the present national political situation as the dates for the European and the general elections approach, and we see the Conservatives and the Liberal Democrats starting to emphasise their individuality. We could have achieved so much more on our own, say the Conservatives. If it wasn't for us, this would never have happened, or that might have made things even worse, is the Lib Dem response. This is all to be expected and perfectly proper in party political terms, and without making a party political point myself, the coalition government has actually been more effective than many anticipated. So for the moment, it's over to those currently in power to deal with the aftermath of storms, floods and coastal damage. While there'll be general agreement on what needs to be done, tough decisions will have to be made over priorities, planning and financing. Protection should be given in the name of the game from the immediate probabilities and long-term possibilities. Repairing and preparing, best done when all concerned work as one.
Belgarum has given us three snippets this week, and so, Margaret, can we have the first Belgarum?
An apprenticeship lets Harriet earn and learn. Getting their hands dirty and not being afraid to muck in, that's what interviewees usually promise potential employers to show they can work as a team. But Sparshot College's principal, Tim Jackson, took the notion to a whole new level when he hopped on a tractor during National Apprenticeship Week. He paid Druids Lodge Partnerships Farm a visit alongside agricultural apprentice Harriet Warne in celebration of the college's first-class apprenticeship programme. Harriet is currently on level 2, but is making plans for her level 3 qualification. She said, "I have always wanted to do an apprenticeship so I could earn and learn at the same time. For me, getting hands-on practice is the best way to learn, so an apprenticeship is absolutely ideal." Mr. Jackson said, "It's great to see young people choosing to pursue a career in agriculture, and because of her experience of machines and tractors prior to the age of 16, Harriet is given a higher level of responsibility than her age suggests would be usual. Most young people, especially those from non-farming backgrounds, tend to need to acquire a range of knowledge and skills prior to applying for an apprenticeship vacancy. That's where a one-year or even two-year college course incorporating high levels of practical skills alongside technical know-how, science and technology is often an excellent way of acquiring that. Now in its seventh year, National Apprenticeship Week aims to raise awareness of the benefits of becoming an apprentice and hiring one within your business."
Bishop backing a broader base. The city's bishops have a long history of being ahead of the curve on education. It was, after all, William of Wykeham who founded Winchester College, one of the most prestigious and respected public schools, way back in 1382. So it's therefore perhaps unsurprising that current incumbent, the Right Reverend Tim Dakin, should this week address the House of Lords on the importance of academic research as part of teacher training. He commended classroom-based tuition, but argued that this should be supported by teachers developing an understanding of other aspects of the profession, such as the science behind it and broader child development. Teachers can make the greatest difference to pupils from the most disadvantaged communities. Academic success is vital, but so is capacity, resilience, and spiritual maturity, he said. I question whether the government's policies for improving the quality of teaching have been fully effective and will enable social mobility. I urge the government to reflect again and to promote a truly mixed ecology of teaching training that allows for planning, forward-thinking, onward-going research in education, as well as an entrepreneurial spirit for how teachers are trained.
Rachel's in at the deep end. Winchester's Rachel Marcus has suddenly found herself helping to organise what is believed to be the world's first para-polo match. Service personnel who have sustained life-changing injuries during, including Medstead's Nick Cowley, are set to play alongside members of the Army team at Tidworth on Sunday, June the 1st. Last year's Best of British Polo was at Bramdean, but this much larger event will be held at one of the country's most beautiful venues next to the Army base. I only became involved in December, but I know the polo world well. The one thing we hope is that the weather will be in our favour, says Rachel. The day will also feature the Duke of York Cup, an annual ding-dong between the RAF and Royal Navy, plus a Best of British match in which some of the top names in British polo will take part. All profits will be donated to Help for Heroes.
And now we have What's On for the next few weeks. Here are several events in and around Winchester. On Tuesday the 25th of March at the Paul Woodhouse Suite in Winchester Cathedral Close, there's a talk by Paolo Franchi of Franchi Seeds, the oldest family-run seed company in the world, entitled From Seeds to Plate: Cooking and Vegetables in Italy from Roman Times to the Present Day. Tickets for this are £9, or £6 for Cathedral Friends, and to get them you can ring 01962 857 245. That's 01962 857 245. On Wednesday the 26th of March at 7:30 p.m. there's a poetry cafe evening at the Winchester Discovery Centre, and it's £4 for readers and £3 for listeners. So you can just go along and listen to people reading the poetry. On Thursday the 27th of March at the Hampshire Record Office at 1:15 p.m. there's a free talk by Andrew Whitmarsh entitled Hampshire and D-Day. There's no need to book for this event. And on the same day, Thursday the 27th of March, at Winchester Cathedral at 7:30 p.m, there's a new choral work, The Great Turning, by Professor Jude Boyce Tillman of Winchester University, featuring children's choirs, community choirs and orchestra. And the cost of tickets is £7, or £5 for students and concessions. And tickets can be obtained from the Cathedral Box Office, 01962 857 275. That's 857 275. On Friday the 28th of March at 7:30 p.m. and Saturday 29th of March at 2:15 p.m. at the Winchester Discovery Centre, there's a dramatic presentation with music, They Did Their Bit, portraying real stories of Winchester in World War I. On straight stage next week at the Theatre Royal Winchester from the 27th to the 29th of March, we have The Russian Doctor, inspired by Anton Chekhov's Sakhalin Island and his death-defying journey across Siberia. The box office is 01962 840 400. At the Chesil Theatre, Winchester, from the 29th of March to the 5th of April, we have Molière's The Misanthrope. And ticket information line is 07527 471 539. That's 07527 471 539. And at the Mayflower Theatre, Southampton, from the 25th to the 29th of March, is Matthew Bourne's Swan Lake. The box office number for this is 023 8071 1811. 023 8071 1811. Well, that's a nice lot of things to be able to be go and see. Lighting up time ends today, the 21st of March, at 6:06 in the morning, and begins again at 6:18 in the evening. On Wednesday, the 26th of March, it ends at 5:53 a.m. What's that? 7:06 and begins at 6:28. in the evening. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. 01962 870 370. And after all that, we continue with items of general news.
Trust fined for failing to control bug in hospital. £660,000 paid out as gut infection exceeds guidelines. The trust, which runs Winchester Hospital, has been fined hundreds of thousands of pounds for repeatedly failing to control the gut infection Clostridium difficile. Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust has a yearly limit of 21 cases of C. diff before clinical penalties are imposed. At the end of the third quarter last year, the Trust had already exceeded that target with 33 cases of the infection. With a financial penalty of £55,000 for each breach imposed by a health watchdog monitor, the Trust has already paid out £660,000. And it faces further fines should more cases be reported in the final quarter of the financial year. Speaking at a meeting of the Council of Governors, Trust Medical Director Dr. Andrew Bishop said C. diff is an ongoing issue in clinical care. What is becoming clear is that trying to understand the causes of C. diff is difficult. Around 40% of people who come into hospital have this bug in their guts. Hospital patients are particularly prone to the infection. The use of antibiotics can cause the infection to thrive because it will kill harmless bacteria in the gut as well as any bacteria that originally caused an infection. The removal of this harmless bacteria can allow C. diff to flourish. Dr. Bishop said, "What we have to be concerned about are the instances in which the infection is picked up in hospital." He reassured the Council of Governors that these instances were vanishingly small, according to research the hospital has carried out. The meeting heard that hospital bosses are concerned at the impact the fines are having on the finances of the Trust. The Trust, which also runs hospitals in Basingstoke and Andover, is lagging behind its own financial plan with a deficit of £0.1 million to £2.8 million, behind the planned surplus of £2.7 million. David French, financial director at the Trust, said, "The problem that we face is common with a lot of trusts, is that for every case over and above 21, we face a fine of £55,000. This has a significant effect on our profits. Hospital bosses have been in discussion with the health watchdog about whether the fines are fair," the meeting heard.
70,000 sandbags won't go to waste. It's the latest problem caused by the severe winter floods. What are we going to do with the thousands of sandbags used across Hampshire to stem the tide of water? But the good news is they are to be recycled, even if they have been exposed to sewage and wastewater. County Council officials have confirmed that they will be treated and decontaminated before going back into storage, where they will be ready in case the water level rises again. A spokesman said, "Sandbags, which have been used at individual homes and businesses and have not come into contact with contaminated water, will be able to be used in the future, emptied and dug into the soil or taken to household waste recycling centres." The County Council is currently advising householders to retain the sandbags until the flooding risk reduces further. These sandbags are classified as household waste and will be able to be received and then recycled. Empty sandbags can be placed in household bins for normal curbside collections, but not full sandbags because they are too heavy for the lifting equipment on refuse collection vehicles. However, council chiefs have warned people that none of the sand should be played with by youngsters. The spokesman said, "The sand in the sandbags, even while not contaminated, is not suitable for children to play in or use in children's sandpits. residents are being asked to take appropriate precautions when handling used sandbags, such as wearing protective gloves and taking care when lifting. Sandbags are classed as contaminated in the following situations. When deployed to retain raw sewage. When deployed to protect against or retain oil. When deployed to retain surface water or groundwater which has had continual exposure to sewage or oils. When they smell of sewage or oil. When they show signs of being contaminated by sewage or oil. Where sandbags have been deployed by local authorities to whole streets or neighbourhoods, the local authority will take responsibility for their collection and will arrange for recycling at the appropriate time. They will be collected in skips, in lorries or large containers by the district authorities, Hampshire County Council or the Environment Agency. About 70,000 sandbags have been laid around Hampshire. Some 21,000 were distributed by Winchester City Council to protect homes near the River Itchen and St Bede Primary School, which was temporarily evacuated. Several one-ton sandbags were also used to dam the Itchen near the M3 to stop a surge of water into the city. They were also used across Romsey, where 300 homes were in danger from the River Test bursting its banks until troops from the Royal Engineers teamed up with Hampshire Fire and Rescue Service, the Environmental Agency and Test Valley Borough Council to dam the river at Fish Lake Stream.
Airport's ambitious plans to set up Keylink to London. The move could add 2.5 million passengers a year. Major plans are underway to market Southampton Airport as a key link to London for foreign travellers and boost passenger numbers by millions. The scheme was revealed just days after plans were announced to extend the terminal's runway by 150 metres. That would mean flights will be available to new destinations like Greece, Scandinavia and Eastern Europe. Airport bosses said they would create up to 1,000 new jobs and boost the local economy by £50 million a year. Moves to increase passenger numbers to 2.5 million a year are already underway at the airport with so-called London Link scheme. It means that air passengers from the Channel Islands and France have the option of buying cheap return rail tickets for just £30 from Southampton to the capital as part of an all-inclusive package. Meanwhile, normal Hampshire Rail passengers travelling at peak commuter times have to pay £77.60 for a return from Parkway Station. Despite marketing the airport's one-hour rail links with Waterloo Station, bosses insist they have no intention of adding London to the terminal's name, unlike the airports at Oxford, Luton, Stansted, Southend and Gatwick. The airport, just minutes from Parkway train station, teamed up with Southwest Trains, as well as flight operators Flybe and Blue Island, to offer the deal which has proved an early hit. Explaining London Link, Airport Managing Director David Lee said, "A number of other airports call themselves London, but we're not going that way." However, due to the proximity of Southampton Airport Parkway train station and the high frequency of trains, you can get to London very quickly. The popularity of London Link is increasingly significant. Southampton Airport Parkway's train station is right next to the terminal, and passengers have a choice of 50 trains a day with a joint journey time of just over an hour. Airport bosses believe it makes them a great alternative to Gatwick. The rail users' campaign group Passenger Focus has praised the deal, but hit out at the existing peak time prices. Acting Chief Executive David Sidebottom said, £30 is a great deal for air passengers travelling at Southampton Airport to get into the capital, but it doesn't alter the fact that £77.60 for an any-time return for other passengers is a lot of money. Chief Executive Hampshire Chamber of Commerce Stuart Dunn said, He had sympathy for train passengers forced to pay the full prices, but added, "We've got to be open for business and have incentives for people to come and use our services." South West Trains defended the ticket deal with the airport. A spokesman said, "As with any mode of transport, there are different levels of pricing which take into account whether the passenger has booked in advance or any special offers available."
Upset over new recycling bins. Residents say they've been confused by new charity bin recycling bins placed near their Winchester homes. The car park near the Tesco store in Priors Dean Road, Harestock, is usually home to closed recycling bins in aid of the Salvation Army and Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance Service. But they have been removed by Winchester City Council and replaced by the council's own, which do not list any benefiting charities. Dave Fountain of Littleton Harestock Parish Council said people were unsure as to why this had happened. He said, "I used to go down to Hampshire Air Ambulance because it is a worthy cause. If ever we had a big clear out, that is where we would put all our clothes. But now I don't have a choice and have to put them in a council recycling bin." The City Council said the bins are designed to guarantee charities match or exceed the income they currently generate, with the surplus being used to support community projects. When the scheme was first introduced, leader of the council, Councillor Keith Woods, said, "We believe we can create a win-win situation so that everyone benefits. I would like to stress that our charities will not be a penny out of pocket. Indeed, they may gain income. But the scheme will also give us the resource to direct money to charity and community causes much closer to home. We are determined to make our recycling services a success, and this is an easier and obvious way to do it." And there it's accompanied by a picture of Dave Fountain looking none too pleased with his arms folded with these bright blue bins.
Elderly couple told to clean up tree debris. An elderly couple were told it was their responsibility to clean up debris from a tree in their back garden that was removed without their permission. John and Gillian Chapman, aged 78 and 73 respectively, from Sutton Scotney, say the tree was taken down without notice, smashing a greenhouse and ruining part of their manicured garden, leaving them with a bill for £1,000. The tree was cut down last month by Hampshire County Council after complaints from neighbours during the high winds. The broken branches were left strewn across their garden shed, greenhouse and plum tree, all of which have been damaged. The mess, which has been left for more than a month, is obstructing a large area of the Oxford Road property's back garden, said Mrs. Chapman. "I was speaking to my next-door neighbour and she said to me, 'Jill, I think they're out there cutting your tree down,' she said. 'I didn't think they could be, because it was so windy. When I saw the devastation in the morning, I was horrified. Hampshire County Council was going to charge us £1,000 for the call-out.' However, the retired osteopaths have since been told, because the tree belongs to them, it is their responsibility to clear up after the aftermath, and the council is refusing to help." Mrs. Chapman said, "We have booked in for a tree surgeon to come and clear it up on April the 17th. That is the earliest he could come, because he's inundated with work at the moment because of all this terrible weather. He has lived in Sutton Scotney since he was a boy, so he said he would come to help us. Even at a reduced rate, the couple will still have to fork out £550 to see their garden back to tip-top condition." Councillor Porter said she thinks the council made a hasty decision to cut back the tree. "The least they could do is to come and clear up the mess," she said. "They were lucky their chickens weren't killed by the branches as they were cut down, but their greenhouse was smashed. The county has an efficient tree team that could do this job in hours." Hampshire County Council's executive member for Economy, Transport and Environment, Councillor Sian Woodward, said the council's highways team was alerted to the tree dangerously swaying in the wind after calls to the police from concerned neighbours. He said, having unsuccessfully tried to contact the property owner, and even though the tree was on private property, a decision was made to put public safety first. As this matter concerned a tree on private property, it really is a matter for the owner's insurance, and the council has offered to fully support them in any insurance claim by providing evidence of the situation. I've also asked officers to consider if there is anything further that we can reasonably do to support removal of the remainder of the tree.
And now we have potholed roads reminiscent of the Third World. Rural Hampshire is among the worst seen, says globe-trotting TV reporter. A globe-trotting TV journalist who has been to the world in the world's trouble spots has fallen victim to some of the world's worst roads in rural Hampshire. Richard Gainsford is chief correspondent for ITV Daybreak and has reported on major stories at breakfast time for the past 14 years. During the last 12 months, he's travelled to South Korea, the Philippines, South Africa, and last week, Ukraine and Crimea, as well as spending weeks reporting on the severe storms and flooding in southern England. Mr. Gaysford, who lives in his family with his family in the Meon Valley, drives more than 30,000 miles each year, mostly in the middle of the night. Yet in the past month, Mr. Gaysford says he's lost two tyres to pothole damage, the worst case last weekend when a new tyre was ripped open by the jagged edge of a pothole more than 4 inches deep. The face of Breakfast TV said, "It's not just the cost of fixing the damage, it's the inconvenience too that's so frustrating. I understand the council is struggling to keep up with the road repairs and is facing huge compensation claims, but surely it would make financial sense to repair these roads as quickly as possible rather than pour more money into paying for damage to people's cars. I'm lucky enough to travel the globe with work, but over the last month I've only had to take my own car through the Meon Valley to experience road conditions reminiscent of the developing world. Massive holes, craters and jagged edges now lie around every corner. It makes driving through this beautiful part of Hampshire a potentially dangerous, damaging and costly business. However, there are some consolation for Mr. Gaysford. At last they've started fixing some of the craters on the bus route near West Meon that have been hidden by huge puddles for the past few weeks," he added. And there's a picture of Mr. Gaysford with his damaged tyre and also one of the infamous cones above a pothole revealed by subsiding waters.
Fashion comes to the city. Fashionistas in Winchester are preparing for one of the most talked-about fashion events outside of London. Now in its fourth year, Winchester Fashion Week aims to showcase the best of Winchester's creative talent, highlighting the individuality, innovation and skills of the city's fashion industry. The five-day event from April the 1st to the 5th will include national and independent retailers, local designers and the full range of associated industries including hairdressing, makeup and cosmetics, photography, modelling, all taking part. It forms part of the festivals in Winchester that brings the city to life between April and September each year. The week will be made up of a number of events held across the city and promises to have something for everyone, with a mix of workshops, lectures and style advice sessions and shopping experiences taking place each day. The week will culminate in a glamorous finale catwalk fashion show on Saturday, April the 5th, showcasing a cross-section of Winchester's retailers, including the likes of Boudoir Blush, The White Company, Justice, Brides of Winchester and Kath Kidson.
Struggling night bus to continue. A night bus in Winchester that often runs with no passengers is to carry on, with the support of the City Council, a meeting heard. The 5A, which sets off from Silver Hill and takes in the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, Badger Farm, Stanmore Lane, Week and Hairstock, has been subsidised by the Town Forum since 2012. Although buses are generally the responsibility of the County Council, City Councillors have earmarked £13,000 towards the Stagecoach operated service, a decision which Councillor Robert Sanders branded as financially irresponsible. We've done our 18-month experiment, and we have found that it is being used by students to get home after a night out on Friday, which is not its intended purpose, he said. It's not commercially viable, and I suggest we discontinue it. It's a waste of taxpayers' money. At the meeting last week, councillors considered a report which showed that in the first 69 weeks of operation, the service often completed its route without any passengers aboard. The report also claims that 5,500 people used the service each year, a figure dismissed by Councillor Fiona Mather, who pointed out that the figure was the cumulative number of individual journeys and doesn't represent 5,500 passengers. She said it could be as few as 24 people each year. Councillor Hutchison chaired the meeting and said that an agreement had been reached with the university which will increase its advertising of the service. He also said that bus times were out of kilter with the train times and from London, and that that should be looked into. Councillors voted overwhelmingly in principle to continue the service. Councillor Dominic Hiscock said, "I wouldn't like to see something go that has an important social value." Councillor James Maynard said, "I don't see it would take too much to get the numbers up. We look hard at how it's promoted, and if the numbers don't improve, we'll discontinue it." The Town Forum's decision enables the County Council to tender the service and establish costs in time for the expiration of the current contract with Stagecoach, which ends in September. The Forum will make a formal decision at its next meeting in June.
Revised Pitt Manor given the go-ahead. Affordable homes at site will be upgraded. Winchester's planners have approved revised plans that will see affordable housing being built to a higher environmental standard than one sold at market value. Councillors met to discuss a detailed application for Pitt Manor, which got outline approval last autumn. Fresh objections were made over the layout, impact of traffic, and predominantly drainage. However, councillors were left baffled when planning officer Lorna Hutchings confirmed that houses sold at market value would be less green than the affordable homes. Addressing Simon Packer, director of planning specialist Turley Associates, chairman councillor Lawrence Ruffle said, "You have a code 3 houses, you have code 3 houses being sold at market value, and yet code 4 for affordable houses. What are you going to do about that? It's not good advertising for you, is it?" Mr. Packer said, "My client is aware, but there is no legal requirement to provide code 4 housing. I am happy to put it to my client, and it would not be of an inconsiderable cost." Parish Councillor Eleanor Bell said, "I believe we're building for tomorrow using yesterday's standards. I know of no business that would consider marketing strategy based on lower quality, higher price. We owe it to our children and the environment to ensure that everything built in our time is built to the most energy efficient insulation standards. The development will mean another 80 affordable homes will be built in an area with a waiting list of some 4,000 people. Representatives from Oliver's Battery, Pitt and Hursley raised objections to the problems 200 more houses would bring for an already waterlogged area, citing issues with the local original plan's outline for the drainage system. Drainage engineer Patrick Aust said, "There are large areas of permeable material, so the water will fall." The pond itself is underlined by a blanket stuffed with sand and gravel, and the water will slowly seep back into the chalk. Winchester has a head start of everybody else because we have a naturally sustainable water drainage system. However, despite these objections, planning chiefs voted unanimously for the revised plans to go ahead. Councillor Frank Pearson said, "I'm told the affordable houses will be built to a high specification. I do like the look of the village and the public open space."
Rob takes over as Tory leader. Rob Hamby has been elected as the man to take Winchester City Council's Conservative Party forward. He confirmed this week that he will succeed Councillor Keith Wood, who is stepping down at the May local elections. Councillor Hamby, who represents the Oslebury and Curdridge ward, was unopposed when elected leader this month by fellow councillors. The 54-year-old's new role will be officially confirmed at the forthcoming Conservative AGM. "Obviously, I'm very pleased that I've been elected," he said. "The priority now is to retain control of the council, but my portfolio is economic development and supporting local businesses." Councillor Hamby has served as Deputy Councillor Wood for the past 2 years.
Getting set to march into battle. This is headed by a photograph of men in sort of burgundy-coloured uniforms with their iron helmets and swords ready, and it's advertising a historic armed force which will march across Hampshire to mark the 370th anniversary of a famous battle. The Tiller's Regiment of the Sealed Knot will complete a 26-mile march between Basing and Bishop Sutton near Alresford. The group leaves Basing House on Saturday, March the 29th, to celebrate the 370th anniversary of the Battle of Cheriton on March the 24th, 1644. An estimated 2,000 men were killed in what was to be a turning point of the English Civil War, with Cromwell's parliamentarian forces defeating the King's Royalist troops. The two-day march includes an overnight stop in the village of Weald and will arrive at the Ship Inn, Bishop Sutton, on March the 30th. This event, which is open to all, is organised by the Battle of Cheriton Project Group and is a prelude to the History Through the Ages weekend, which takes place at Scrubs Farm, Bishop Sutton, on the weekend of June the 28th, 29th. Plans are well advanced for the summer event, which will provide non-stop arena activity, authentic reenactment, static displays, military encampments, stalls, demonstrations, and a fun fair.
Reckless disregard costs patient his life. Standard of care is criticised for a terminally ill man. An inquest heard how the reckless disregard of patient safety resulted in the death of a man who had long been suffering from a genetic disease. Matthew Simmons, who died at his mother's home in Oakmount Road, Chandler's Ford, was dying from a rare genetic condition called von Hippel-Landau syndrome, resulting in the need for round-the-clock care and invasive ventilation. The court heard how Mr. Simmons, 39, had been discharged from Southampton General Hospital on July the 6th, 2011, to spend the remainder of his life at home, but died just hours after the ventilators had not been turned on by either of the agency nurses contracted to care for him. Dr. Dominic Bell, an intensive care consultant, said in his report that the evidence indicated a reckless disregard of patient safety and had shown unidentifiable shortfalls in the agency. "I think ensuring familiarity with the patient and the defined care plan is part of the handover of care," he said. Mr. Simmons' condition caused tumours to grow in his neck and brain, and doctors at Southampton General expected him to die within days or weeks. Wimborne Nursing Agency and Team Medical had arranged for nurses to carry out 24-hour care for Mr. Simmons for the duration of his remaining life. However, one of the nurses contracted, Katatiatu Harris, said she felt the handover was rushed between herself and the duty nurse she'd been taking over from, Fauzia Rust. Recording a narrative verdict, Mr. Graham Short, coroner for the Central Hampshire, said the two nurses were not working as a team, probably due to their opposing personalities. It's important that all necessary information is relayed from the first nurse to the second. Both nurses have responsibility for the patient during this part. I find that this was a failure in the changeover of the ventilators to ensure the ventilator was operational, and that there was further failure to ensure the patient was breathing properly. Zandra Simmons, Matthew's mother, said he was just a wonderful son, surrounded by friends and family who loved him dearly. Kerry Harnett, branch manager of Team Special, said, "We would like to pass on our sincere condolences. Team Medical knew how important it was for Matt and his family to ensure he was discharged home to die, and worked hard in order to achieve this with a short timescale for the family. We were all deeply saddened by the subsequent events and appreciate the inquest will have been brought back difficulties and distressing memories. The Nursing and Midwifery Council confirmed that both nurses currently have restrictions on their abilities to practice as nurses."
Wildlife groups raise fears over fracking. They are iconic beauty spots and delicate ecosystems teeming with rare wildlife, but countryside in Hampshire could be at the epicentre of the battleground for controversial fracking. Wildlife groups have launched a new report highlighting the dangers that shale gas exploration and drilling poses to wildlife. The Are We Fit to Frack report calls for extraction exclusion zones in special protection areas, SPAs, special sites of scientific interest, SSSI, and the national parks, warning that endangered species such as pink-footed geese, salmon, and barbastelle bats could be at risk. It contains 10 separate safety recommendations aimed at minimising disruption to animals, insects and plants, and contamination of waterways and groundwater supplies. It is spearheaded by a collection of groups including the RSPB, the National Trust and the Wildfowl Trust, and is supported by a cross-party team of politicians including Southampton Test MP Alan Whitehead. Fracking, or hydraulic fracturing, involves drilling thousands of feet underground and then pumping in pressurised water and chemicals to crack the rocks below and release trapped pockets of gas. Licences for exploratory drilling have been granted in parts of Hampshire, including north of Winchester between Kingsworthy and Stockbridge, stretching east from North Baddersley to Swanwick, Hambledon and Hinton in the New Forest. However, the County Council, Southampton City Council and the South Downs and New Forest National Park authorities still need to give planning permission before exploratory drilling can start. The report also calls for full environmental assessments to be carried out for each drilling proposal and for the industry to pay the cost of regulation and pollution clean-ups. Martin Harper, RSPB Conservation Director, said, "Our report puts a spotlight on risks and reinforces the growing concern about the impact fracking could have on our countryside and wildlife. We argue that more needs to be done to ensure fracking rules are fit for purpose."
This piece is headed "Pathway Cyclists Going Too Fast." Speeding cyclists are putting themselves and others at risk on a pathway in Badger Farm, claim homeowners nearby. More cyclists than ever are said to be racing down the track and into the path of cars backing out of residents' drives in Rancers Way. John O'Leary, who lives there, said, "They come downhill at 30 miles per hour and drivers can't see anything. The cyclists pass in front of the car and one missed me by 6 inches. If he'd hit the side of the car, he would have been severely injured. Someone is going to be killed." The County Council agree it is dangerous, but they're not going to do anything about it. They won't even put up signs saying, cyclists slow down. Mr O'Leary said the council proposed a barrier, but that would stop contractors getting access to cut the grass, so it was rejected. He has since suggested a raised curb to remind cyclists that they do not have the right of way. The council are spending thousands on new cycle paths, and they won't spend a small amount to stop someone being seriously injured, Mr O'Leary added. We are encouraging cyclists, but this situation is highly dangerous. He said lots of school children walk up the path from Stanmore Lane onto Badger Farm and frequently meet cyclists coming downhill at 20 to 30 miles per hour. Emma Holland, a concerned parent, also of Rance's Way, said she's disappointed that the council is not doing more to help and thinks it could split the path in half, one side for cyclists, the other for pedestrians. She said, I've got three boys, two of them of school age, and I'm very concerned, especially when they walk in front of me to the top of the path. I don't want anybody to get hurt. Quite a few motorcyclists go on the path as well. I couldn't believe it when I saw them. Nobody from Hampshire County Council was available to comment at the time of going to press.
More schools pledge to get defibrillators. Teens' heart attack drama. Schools across Winchester are being urged to install life-saving equipment after a pupil was saved by a defibrillator. A survey revealed only one secondary school in Winchester District, Perrins, a community sports college in Alresford, has one. Only 21 out of 57 schools across southern Hampshire possess the £800 equipment on site. Last month, 16-year-old Sam Mongoro suffered a heart attack at Mountbatten School in Romsey. The Mountbatten incident has now prompted several schools to reconsider their stance. A spokesman for King's in Winchester said, "We do have a defibrillator, but it belongs to a pupil, and in the light of the present events at Southampton at Mountbatten School, we're going to get one. The defibrillator we have access to doesn't live on site, and therefore we're moving as quickly as possible to get one." The head of the Westgate School, Paul Nicholson, is currently looking into the purchasing the equipment, said a spokeswoman.
Living wage plan rejected by county. 4,000 low-paid council workers to miss out. Hampshire Liberal Democrats have criticised the rejection of plans to make Hampshire County Council a living wage employer. The scheme would have benefited more than 4,000 low-paid workers, such as cleaners, care workers and catering staff. The decision came at last week's Employment in Hampshire County Council committee meeting. The county's Lib Dems had backed the move to increase the living wage to £7.45 per hour. This is already in place in 448 organisations across the country, and other local authorities, including Eastleigh and Southampton, have indicated they will consider introducing it. Councillor Keith House, Lib Dem leader on Hampshire County Council, said, "I am very disappointed that this idea, initially greeted with enthusiasm by all parties, has been ruled out by Hampshire Conservatives without even a discussion with its own staff. Evidence shows the living wage increases staff productivity and improves staff retention, reducing recruitment and training costs and saving organisations money over time, quite apart from improving quality of life and, for some, dependence on benefits." The committee debated the pros and cons of introducing the living wage based on how much a parent of two with a partner earning the same needs in order to avoid the effects of poverty. But a report to the committee warned introducing the measure would not be without costs. It stated that the £1.5 million cost of introducing it would see the loss of 71 jobs. However, the Living Wage Foundation found that 80% of employers believe it boosted the quality of work among staff and that there was a 25% fall in absenteeism. This comes after research by Citizens UK, which is campaigning for every worker in the country to be able to earn enough to provide their family with the essentials of life, found there were 90,000 people in South Hampshire being paid less than the living wage.
Proud Kev shares accolade with colleagues. The sun may have come out again, but the heroes who kept our homes dry are not being forgotten. Environment Agency employee Kev Priest, whose picture is here, has been nominated as a flood hero by his colleagues for the hard work and long hours he put in over the winter months. Mr. Priest was pictured rescuing an elderly woman from her flooded home in Romsey. He said, "We've worked hard, and I did 104 hours in 1 week. I've been out sandbagging in Romsey and sorting the river Itchen at the M3. It's a source of pride for the Environmental Agency because we get a pasting at times, but the boys have done great work." Mr. Priest, who is 49, from Gosport, has worked for the agency for 4.5 years.
Primed and ready to change lives. A Winchester woman has received a £1,000 grant from Winchester City Council to launch her own business, Intelligent Eating, to help people manage their weight and improve their lifestyles. Miranda Shoebridge, 56, of Kingsworthy, said she wanted to be her own boss after working for other people for more than 30 years. After leaving a job of 13 years as an advisor at a college, Miss Shoebridge took a business training course with the Prince's Initiative for Mature Enterprise, Prime. She said, "Setting up a business is not for the faint-hearted, but I'm thoroughly enjoying the experience, and thanks to Prime, as well as financial support from the council, I'm confident I can create a successful enterprise." The origins of the business came about after seeing an unflattering picture of herself at the beach 5 years ago, which inspired her to get in shape and help other people. Her private practice offers people consultations with plans to give counselling and coaching services for all life issues, specialising in weight management. She said people eat for all sorts of reasons, which include stress, boredom, comfort eating, family situations, as well as social pressures, and they need support to understand their emotions and the motivation to change their habits. "My passion is to help people make sustainable changes rather than trying diet after diet in an often fruitless cycle of weight loss followed by weight gain." Councillor Robert Humby, Deputy Leader of the Winchester City Council, said, "It's good to see how a startup grant from Winchester City Council has made a real difference. We wish Miranda every success in her new venture."
Concern as Probation Trust dissolved. The Hampshire Probation Trust is to be dissolved. The trust, which aims to reduce the number of re-offenders through carefully managed programmes, will be privatised next year. That means that 60% of offenders currently dealt with by HPT will be contracted out to private companies, and the other 40%, usually those deemed high risk, supervised by national government schemes. Although the changes were announced last year, councillors at this week's Safe and Healthy People Select Committee Crime and Disorder Scrutiny meeting seemed surprised. Councillor Jonathan Glenn, Chairman of Policies and Resources Select Committee, raised concerns about the possibility of private contractors abusing the system for financial gain and if companies would be monitored. Chris Mitchell of Hampshire Probation Trust said, "I'm not sure how they will all work just yet. The quality of the work delivered will be subject to inspection, but there are no details behind that at the moment." Councillor Patricia Stallard, who chaired the meeting, added, "There are very uncertain times ahead and we want to keep an eye on that in the future."
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Lorna Chorley and Michael Turner. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and studio preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Margaret Boyden.
Goodbye.
Michael Wyard.
Goodbye.
And Brian Woodruff.
Goodbye.
And from me, Vara Williams. Goodbye and do have a good week. Please post your memory sticks back as soon as possible in the yellow wallet. And when you put your label inside, please make sure that the cord attached to the memory stick is fully inside the wallet as well. Thank you.